Accession number 13042, Rule 4.
Mr. Sobolevsky, Rule 4.
All right, anyway, you ask about the story in Kozelsk. It was actually when we were coming from the work at the station. And our guard brought us to the shop, which they call Holarok, and civilian population was moved out, and we were in uniform, although it were the uniforms of the prisoners of war, but we could get whatever there was in the shop. So some woman said, we have been waiting for 6 months for this stuff, which was sausage, and you got a lot. So poor citizens, they had to wait probably another 6 months before they could get anything.
So if we can pick up your own personal account from having landed in Pahlevi?
Pahlevi, yes. Anyway, in Pahlevi, when we landed, it was a real miracle to see bread in the shops. Because if somebody was hungry for past 3 years and then saw bread, really, I don't know that we didn't break the window in the shop to get that bread.
Were you received by the British Army in Pahlevi?
Yes, in Pahlevi, there was it was the zone occupied by the Soviet troops, but there was British liaison officer, and actually camp, if you can say camp, there was no tent or anything. We were just on the sand, but there were Indian troops which were serving the medical needs and bath, you see. And beside that, that's another thing, when we came, all uniforms what we had, they were burnt out because they were full of insects. So they burnt, and we were issued with the shorts with the tropical uniform and Australian hats. But all other uniforms what we brought from Russia, it was burned. Not think the authorities, they realized they couldn't save it.
How long did they keep you in Pahlevi?
No, in Pahlevi, I don't know, probably some other units, they may stay a bit longer. We were just for 3 days, and then there were the lorries contracted, probably by the War Office, British authorities must be, but there were civilian, the Persian lorries, and they took us through mountains, through Kazvin, to Iraq. And we were just moved about 20 kilometers from, in Iraq, place called Kamakin. And it was just on about 20 kilometers from the Iran's border. Now, that was the main camp. Another one was Kwizil Ribat. So there are two main camps for the Polish army. And all that distance, some units were near the Baghdad, but we were trained in those camps. Depends. Infantry was in Kanakin, and the armored units, they were in Kizil Ribat. So we were trained down there on, firstly, on old Italian tanks, which were captured at, in the desert. And later we were issued with Valentine tanks. There were 2 pounders and 6 pounders guns. And we stayed down there till following year, which was 43.
So you were really, for the first time, being turned into a useful fighting force.
Oh, yes, you see, first we had to recover from our stay in Russia, you see. our unit was very young. The average age, if you take, was 17 and a half. Something, 17 and a half, I think, or 17 or 17 and a half average, because there were some very young soldiers. And you see, they were all ill with the malaria and other tropical diseases. So there was even thought on our command to dissolve that unit. But they given chance to recover, and we recovered. You see, the good food, fresh air, does you good. And training was going mad. Instructors, they were trained in Cairo, in Abbasia. There was the armored school down there. And then they were coming to units, train. You had equipment, and there are all facilities to train. So you see, in 1943, when we went to the north, to Mosul and Kirkuk, because all British troops, they were moved to the desert, and just Polish troops were left down there to guard those oil fields. And later, we followed them. We went to Palestine, 1943, in the autumn. We got new equipment, that's the Sherman tanks, and we were transferred to Egypt.
You say you were guarding the oil fields,
yes.
Was there any threat to them?
Oh, yes, you see, as far as I remember, there was only once our artillery open fire to German plane, because at that time you must remember that German troops were at Caucasus, which isn't too far, I mean, for the plane. They could anytime just come over there and try to bomb or something like that. So you see, we, beside that, the Arabs, they were pro-German. They were pro-German. It's exactly the same as in Egypt. They were pro-German. King Farouk was pro-German. And he had no... In all that battle, Germany and the Eighth Army, he had no influence.
So, can you tell me about going into the North Africa to in preparation to go to Italy?
Oh, yes. You see, when, from Palestine, we were staying actually in Gaza. Now it's called the Gaza Strip. We were staying down there. So we had the last maneuvers already on Sherman tanks. And later the regiment was moved to Egypt, Kassassin. It was a huge camp. Just from Mediterranean right past to the now is Israeli where is port?
Gaza Strip?
No, Gaza Strip. Israeli where is port? Right in the south, on the Red Sea.
Eilat.
That's it.
Aqaba.
So that's it. That was all camps. So we were staying down there. We had another maneuvers down there before we sent. Although desert is quite different than we had prepared for action in Italy. But anyway, we had maneuvers on to get used to new equipment to Sherman tanks.
What job did you do in the Sherman tank? Were you a driver?
No, I was the platoon commander.
So this was an armored regiment we're talking about?
It was an armored regiment. You see, first, when we were staying in Egypt, originally it was the tank regiment. I don't know if you know the difference between tank regiment and the armored regiment.
Can you tell me?
You see, the tank regiment is supporting infantry when infantry is advancing. Now, armored regiment takes the territory or fighting battle, and infantry just clearing, mopping.
So the armored regiment is a spearhead.
That's it. So, you see, we were prepared first as the tank regiment, and then were changed into armored regiment. You see, probably it was with the terrain we had to take action in Italy.
When was it that you actually went across to Italy?
It was 1944, just Thursday before Easter, we loaded our tanks in Alessandria. And from Alessandria on Easter morning at 6 o'clock, we started our journey to Taranto. You see, on the way, it was huge convoy. Especially the oil tankers, they were going to Great Britain, but they were in the same convoy. And we stopped at Catania on Sicily. And then from Sicily, we went the following day to Taranto. Disembark our equipment, and then in several convoys moved towards the casino. And as our troops, they were already in the region about 25 kilometers south of Cassino. When I was coming with the equipment, with the tanks. So we were preparing tanks for the battle because we were putting additional reinforcement plates on the ammunition compartments. So they were just joining additional plates, I think around about the ink on the sides where ammunition compartment is. But anyway, everything was ready for the beginning of May.
What positions did you take up at Cassino?
No, you see, from our regiment, there is only one company took part actually at Cassino battle. There was no, it wasn't terrain for the tanks, but the 4th regiment from our brigade, they had already tanks on the top, on the top, so they were supporting infantry from those tanks. One of our, that's number 3 company, they were defending, they were just actually defending the river Liri. There was crossing, and Germany had to cross, you know, just to retreat, they had to cross, so they were just guarding that. But it was just only the defensive position for our third company. But following the fall of Monte Cassino, the following day our regiment was engaged in battle at Hitler Line. That was the second defense line, which was running from Piedmont, which is what, about 5 kilometers from Cassino to the Tyrrhenian Sea. and we were actually engaged down there.
With whom?
I mean, our regiment was engaged in that battle. Now, unfortunately, we... Oh, with German, yes.
With German infantry?
Oh, no, you see, what happened? It was the reinforced line, Hitler line. Now, they had pillboxes. If you know the military terminology, pillboxes, they had 88mm anti-tank guns, and it was well-defended line. And we were fighting for 5 days down there. We lost, I don't remember how many, but we lost quite a lot of equipment. We lost quite a lot of tanks and casualties in soldiers, they were pretty heavy.
How did the Sherman tank match up to the 88mm anti-tank gun?
There's no comparison. You see, the German, they had 88mm guns on their Tiger tanks and on their Panther tanks. Now, 88mm gun could successfully hit Sherman on distance 2,000 meters. Sherman with 75mm, and later on we had the 16-pounders, and 76mm. You had to get to Tiger not further than 800 meters to get him. So you see, that was the difference. Only German, they had very few tanks in Italy, that's one thing, and we had definite superiority in the air. So you see, our regiment hardly get to fight with German tanks because we had always the airplanes above us. And you see, it was much easier to find German tanks and fight them from the plane than to get into any duel with the Sherman tanks. But anyway, we still at Piedmont, although it was pretty high mountain, and town was right on the top of that mountain. And for 5 days, we have been fighting, and eventually, German gone.
They withdrew.
They withdrew. They had to withdraw. You see, they couldn't stand any longer.
Did you take any German prisoners?
Oh, yes, we had some German prisoners, but you see, they were coming during the battle, but not too many to take whatever defenders were down there, but we didn't take too many because, you see, they didn't surrender. They were fighting. They were young soldiers. They were fighting to the bitter end. We had that experience all the way. I don't know, somehow, you see, it happened. We had always to fight the fourth Gehring division and 26th Panzer Grenadier, which was elite of the German troops. And I don't know why we had always just to fight with them.
So what was the attitude towards the enemy? Did you hate them or respect them or what?
Naturally, your enemy, if you want to fight, you have to hate him. You see, whatever they did to our land, to our country, we hate them. But you see, on the other hand, when they went after the war, when they went to the cemetery. I went to the German cemetery. Now, you see, there is a Polish cemetery, which is, I don't remember, 900-something graves. If you go to German cemetery, it's 20,005.
This is at Piedmonte.
No, that's the casino, actually, because that's all casino. Now, Polish is 900 and something, and if you go to German, it's 20,005. That's when you get to the cemetery, it is on the wall written. If you go first rows, you will find their Polish names and Czech names. So, you see, although it was the name, German position on the other side, who was actually wearing uniform is difficult to say.
How had they come to be in the German army?
You see, Germany, simple, territories which they included into Reich, I mean Polish territories, for the young boys, they called them and said, okay, you are going to German army. If not, you are going into concentration camp. So that's the choice.
So when you saw the cemetery after the war, your attitude changed?
No, I realized that it was, we call it the fight of the brothers. You see, many of those people on the other side, they were not German. You see, it's exactly the same with our human reserve. We had no reserve behind. Our reserves were coming from the other side. You see, because when the Allies, when they capture prisoners, they interview them and ask them whether they were Polish. If they were Polish, they were sent to the separate camp, retrained, and that were our reserves.
So what was the morale of your units in this battle at Piedmonte?
The morale was very high. You see, point is that with the young soldier, there is no fear. You see, I will give you one example. There was one place, I don't know, you remember, there was just like... No, bend of the road, just going serpentine, and tank tried to get over and somehow just turn into ditch. And the gunner was hit just down here. Tank was upside down, and gunner tried to get out, and he was hit down here.
In the abdomen.
Yes. And you see, there was Captain Kuchuk, and the company commander. So he jumped out of his tank, and another two soldiers, they tried to help them there. It was hopeless because they couldn't do anything. But they were immediately shot down, all three. You see, they were running to help. And they were shot because there was distance just only about more than 200 yards. It was a fight, just over the table. It was, anyway, we suffered.
So you say that the young soldiers showed a more reckless attitude than the older ones?
No, I don't say reckless. Only, you see, is the brotherhood with the young soldiers. And beside that, a young soldier, he never thinks about himself. He's the pals, he's the friends, and that's what counts. You see, with the older soldier, I don't think it will be, because let us say if somebody is married, got wife, children, he will think twice before he runs under the fire. But you see, with the young soldier, no, he's just like his brother, or maybe more. And especially in the units just like armored, you see, whether it's commander or driver, you see, they are team. And why? For a simple reason. If commander is wounded, somebody has to help him. If driver is wounded, probably commander has to sit behind the and drive the tank if it is moving. So it is the team, not individuals.
So it's not really a question of age, it's a question of whether you're married or not.
That makes difference, definitely. That will make difference. Because if it is a young soldier, he doesn't care so much about himself and he has no obligations toward his nearest. And when if it is with the family, he will think different. That's my opinion.
So you say you were there attacking the Hitler line for five days
yes.
Before they withdrew?
Yes. We captured that, you see, we captured some prisoners. I don't know if there was many to escape, but those who were left alive, they were captured. And they actually withdrew because there wasn't many left. It was a massacre.
How were the prisoners treated?
Oh, no, prisoners were treated just like... You see, we always treated prisoners according to the convention. You see, first, I was witness when we captured the prisoners. We captured officers. You see, you're giving them drink, you're giving them water. You don't give them the cognac, but you give them water to drink because they are human beings. And once they disarmed, they not any longer your enemy. They are human beings. And you see, they were treated the same always to the end of the war. We always treated them. You see, in later campaigns, we had more and more prisoners, but you treat them with respect.
So when you got into the Hitler line, had the Germans booby-trapped it?
There were some booby-trapped. Now, the those guns, they were hit, although they were in the pillbox. You see, they were all over the ground. They were the cupola, you could see only so much. And they were hit, but you see how many the rounds of ammunition went into that is difficult to say, because they were very difficult to hit. But anyway, on the end, they were destroyed. So you see, there was nothing left out of that town. Town never been rebuilt in the same place. There is only church rebuilt in that place. And town was built in different place, the same Piedmont. But there was nothing left, not even one stone. We built down there monument with the help. I mean, our regimental association built monument with the help of the